I love the truth.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. Health officials say a Colorado National Guard member has the first reported U.S. case of COVID-19 variant and a second case suspected in another Guard member. Dr. Rachel Herlury, the state's epidemiologist, says that the two were deployed on December 23rd to a nursing home with an outbreak of the virus in a small town just outside of Denver. The new and seemingly more contagious variant of the coronavirus was first identified in Britain and has also been found now in several other countries. President Trump is calling on Georgia Governor Brian Kemp to resign.
President Trump called for Georgia Republican Governor Brian Kemp's resignation, hammering him for refusing to back up the president's claim that he carried Georgia in the November presidential election. President Trump and his allies have trained their grievances at Kemp and Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, also a Republican, accusing the duo of mismanaging the election in Georgia. Mr. Trump's tweet, however, marked the first time the president has called for Kemp to step down. Bernie Bennett reporting.
Also at SRNNews.com, Nashville police alerted about the suspected Christmas bomber in 2019, reportedly.
Anthony Warner, the lone suspect identified by authorities in the Christmas morning bombing in downtown Nashville, came to the attention of Nashville police more than a year ago. Police were called to the home of Warner's girlfriend, Pamela Perry, on August 21st, 2019, after her attorney reported she was making suicidal threats. Attorney Raymond Throckmorton was on the scene, and he told officers Perry thought Warner might harm her, and Warner frequently talked about the military and bomb making. Police went to Warner's home, but he didn't answer the door. Nashville police contacted the FBI, but the FBI found no records on Warner. I'm Mike Gracia.
And the number of Americans who signed contracts to buy homes declined again last month. Pending sales fell 2.6% to 125.7 in November. This is SRN News.
For your Wednesday afternoon, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of scattered showers, high 73. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low about 59. Thursday, the final day of the year, mostly sunny with a high 78. Thursday night on New Year's Eve, mostly cloudy, low 63. And Friday on New Year's Day, partly sunny, high 80.
A ranger station.
I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
I put out my campfire and Smokey Bear hugged me.
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Yep, he's just letting you know you did good.
Bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update.
I'm gonna let you go now.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service, Ad Council, and your state forester.
Hey, this is Doug McCary from SWAT Radio. I want to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas, and Taylor and I are going to be out for the next few weeks, but we return January 4th, so enjoy these best of programs on SWAT Radio. Keep listening, and we'll be back January 4th with live programs on SWAT Radio. Have a Merry Christmas.
Request time. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engines running. Commit. Liftoff.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to SWAT Radio. I'm Brad Sykes. I'm here with my good buddy, Doug McCary. Doug, you look, I don't know, you look like you've been out in the sun today, buddy. What, you like play a little golf today?
Just a little bit. I was
Did
just,
you get nine holes or 18
no,
holes?
No, it was just nine.
Okay,
it
so
was,
just a little, you know, just little, some minor league.
Just some stress relief.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. Very
anyway,
good.
Anyway, and it was ministry, right? I was
well,
out there
exactly.
with anytime you're one-on-one with a guy, and, you know, I'm just.
Well, I've been telling you, we need to start a new ministry. Hey, one-on-one
well,
on the golf course.
I had a good brother in Texas who is his ministry. He wanted to. He just said, hey, as much as you want to play golf, I will pay for you to go play golf. You just have to do it with somebody.
We'll see. I mean, so I've had two meetings today, both one-on-one, which our guest today can relate to the one-to-one material that Joe White put together years ago.
Yeah.
boy, there's no better place than to open up that book on a golf course, on a golf cart. You know,
yeah, golf
just
cart.
Put it right in between you and your buddy.
Hey, it was, you know what? It was nice. We didn't have rain for once, even though it's kind of getting rainy out there now. Hey, you know, Brad, I don't know if you saw this on the internet. This thing is making its rounds. A guy named Andrew Stockline is a pastor, 30 years old, out in California.
Mm-hmm.
Took his own life.
Yes.
Married with three small children. Just a pastor of a mega church out there. And it is, a lot of people are speaking about that. And your prayers certainly go out to the family.
Well, in fact, I got a text today. I'm just looking here for it, that my wife sent me, a local high school kid committed suicide.
Well, it just, more and more people are doing that. Now, social media has contributed a lot, obviously, to high schoolers. This guy, it was a pastor. And, you know, in ministry, a lot of times it's hard because you feel alone.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you feel like you bear the brunt. In fact, you and I were talking about some pastors here that we know that it's just you bear the brunt of this. And that's why our guest today, I'm really excited to have Ted. Ted's been doing pastoring for a long time. And he's good friends with our good friend Joe White and Missouri. But he was also really good friends with another guy that was influential. At least I know he was in our life, Lori and I. I don't know about you and Vicky, but Gary Smalley.
Yes.
I still remember going to the first Gary Smalley conference.
Was that with John Trent? And
Yeah.
I'm a John Trent guy because he's a TCU boy.
So, well, Gary was great at just getting you to laugh through some things about marriage, and Ted's good with that, dude. And, you know, just real quick, a little bit about Ted, our guest today. Ted Cunningham is a founding pastor of Woodland Hills Family Church in Branson. He's married to Amy, been married for over 20 years, have two children, and he's written several books, Fun Loving You, Trophy Child, Young and in Love. He also co-authored with Dr. Smalley, The Language of Sex and From Anger to Intimacy. And he just recently, I guess, released a book called Come to the Family Table, which he co-authored with Amy, his wife. And he does the date night comedy tour. In fact, I think he was here in Jacksonville earlier this year. He's going to be in Florida, a couple other places here later. In fact, we'll ask him. Ted, welcome to SWAT Radio.
Hey, thank you all for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah. So are you were here in Jacksonville. It says February 3rd. Did you do something at First Baptist or was that a different place? Were you at a different church here?
I think it was North Jacksonville Baptist.
Okay.
No, North Jacks Baptist. Yeah, you were here.
Yeah.
And I was just looking at your calendar and you're going to be down in Coral Gables in about a week, right? Down there,
Coral. Yeah, a week from tomorrow.
That's almost as good as Branson.
Yeah,
yeah. Might as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
6 hours.
Well, hey, I was so blessed with what you shared out at Branson. Brad was supposed to go; he had to go somewhere else, so he didn't get to make it out there. So I just said, "Hey, this week, Brad, we're going to talk about enjoying life with your wife because that's what Ted basically shared on from Ecclesiastes 9:9. And so we've been talking about that this week. And, you know, did you get a chance, Ted, to hear about that young pastor out in California? Did you see any of that stuff?
I did, yeah.
It's tragic, isn't it? I mean.
Oh, and I do. I think about the loneliness. I think about my friend Lance Witt has a ministry called Replenish, and his passion in life is helping pastors live from a replenished soul, but it's twofold. It's helping pastors learn to live replenished, but it's also teaching churches how to allow their pastors to live replenished. Mm. And I love that's really, if you're going to have a healthy church and a pastor that goes the distance, you're really going to need to do both well. Help a church understand that God didn't call that guy there to be your best friend. He called him there to be a shepherd.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And to lead. And, I spend a lot, I don't do one-on-one counseling a lot, but I do a lot of working with pastors, whose marriages have found their way into the grind of life. And, you know, it's the same, just run. Let's get bigger, do more, add more services, add more ministries, add more programs. Pastor, you need to show up at all of them. And it's just the families and the marriages, and the soul of the pastor pays the price.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things I found, Ted, as an itinerant guy going around to different churches, a lot of times the pastors would open up because they really don't have anybody else to open up to, or at least nobody they feel like they can open up to. And so they end up bearing a lot of this stuff on their own. Do you find that as well?
Yeah, to where they don't even share it. I think I shared this in Branson, to where they don't even share it with their spouse.
Yeah.
And if they don't have the safety to share what's, going on in the ministry, even with their spouse, I don't know all of the situations surrounding that, the church and the pastor, but my heart breaks for his wife and his three children. And I know that the church has the resources available to them. Everybody wants to help any way they can. And so we just continue to pray and do what we can for them during this time.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we can do. And we do ask that you continue praying. And speaking of prayer, real quick, just an aside, thank you for the people who've texted about my grandson. Ted, this past Saturday, I had my fourth grandchild, my fourth grandson, actually, too. Mm-hmm. And he's in the NICU unit down here because he's having some issues with his blood. So people were praying. So appreciate all the prayers about that. And Ted, it was a good reminder just last week when we were out in Branson to, you know, first of all, I never heard anybody teach on Ecclesiastes 9. So, I mean, when you brought that up, I mean, because it's kind of tucked away into all the other stuff that Solomon was really recounting about his life. And so it was really, really good to hear what you shared. And so we talked about the marital satisfaction. I love the quote that you said, it's a choice, not an outcome. And it depends on factors and skills that couples can do something about any season or stage of life. Can you kind of expand that just a little bit, especially in light of with men, how marital drift can slip into the marriage, especially in the 5 to 8 year mark? You know, can you kind of unpack that a little bit, what you were talking about, you know, marital drift and this, how our satisfaction does not depend on factors. And I mean, doesn't depend on necessarily anything but the fact that we put time and effort into it.
Yeah. And that's kind of how Amy and I frame our marriage. It's about attention, not hard work. Something we use in counseling is the term confirmation bias or confirmatory bias, where you make decisions and then you look for the evidence to back those up. And with your background, Doug, you know exactly what this means. You don't walk onto a crime scene and make a decision of what went down, because then you will fail to see all the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see all of the evidence through the lens of the decision that you made. So the power of this in relationships is, you know, if you believe your wife is a nag, you're only going to hear her words as controlling and manipulating. That's it. If you've made the decision that your husband is lazy, you're only ever going to see him resting or taking a nap. I mean, you're going to interpret all of his behaviors through the decision that you made. And so it's one of the reasons we keep an honor list. We can talk about that in a moment. But many people have made the decision, marriage is hard. You hear Christians say this all the time. Marriage is hard. Marriage takes hard work. It is grueling, difficult, painful. It will beat you down and drain the life out of you. But that's okay, because it makes you more like Jesus. So
let's all get married.
People, yeah. And you know, no wonder young people are saying, hey, I'd rather go on a mission trip. That sounds a lot easier.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll go give my life to a third world country than to get married. So if you've made that decision, marriage is hard, you're going to get up every day looking for the hard, grueling work it takes to make a marriage great. But if you've made the decision, we're going to enjoy life together, you take the same circumstances, the same situations and the stages and seasons of life that hit us all, and you say, we are going to choose to enjoy life through this difficult or challenging season. God did not give me Amy to be the grind of life. He gave Amy to me and me to Amy that we could be teammates through the grind of life. If you've made the decision marriage is hard, you're going to begin to see your spouse as an opponent and someone you have to work towards and fight for. No, it's about making decisions. Great marriages don't just happen. You don't drift your way into a great marriage. You decide your way into it. And it's just giving it attention each and every day and finding ways to enjoy a quality couple time and speaking words of high value over one another. That to me sounds a lot better than this thing called marriage. It's hard, difficult, painful, grueling, and draining the life out of you. But that's what it's supposed to be. So, not according to what I read in Scripture.
Yeah. So what do you say, Ted, to the spouse, man or woman, who is married? They both claim to be believers, but one of the spouses is really struggling to feel any kind of emotional connection, and this has gone on. And so I think you referred to marital drift that can happen in any, you know, in that marriage relationship. What do you say to that spouse who putting in the effort, trying to be attentive, but the other person has checked out? They're gone. I mean, they've just kind of checked out mentally and emotionally from the relationship. How do you help that person to continue on and give them hope? I mean, what do you say? Because I'm sure you encounter people like that.
Oh, and there's really two questions in what you just asked. And the first one is, one, drift is the lack of decision. Right? The drift doesn't take any skill, and it takes no decision. So if you're not making decisions to prioritize your marriage above the kids, to prioritize quality couple time, to speak words of high value over one another, if you've no longer been making those decisions, you have drifted toward disconnection, disillusionment, separation, divorce. That you've just moved out. It's what cohabitation is. Cohabitation is we're not going to define this relationship. We're not really going to make any solid decisions based on traditional relationship formation milestones. We're just going to do nothing and just see where it goes. Hmm. Well, you end up signing a lease together and you don't even really know how that happened. You end up you end up sharing a pet. I mean, and that didn't even make a decision on that. You were just going to Walmart one day and you saw a truck in the Walmart parking lot giving away puppies. And you're like, hey, let's get one. Well, now you just took you call it a puppy. I call it a constraint. You just now took on a shared 15-year responsibility. And you're like, how did we end up in this apartment together? And how did we end up in this with this puppy together? It's because you didn't make any decisions. Mm-hmm. And you just let it happen. You liked each other on a date and you were attracted to one another and you had chemistry. And then you hooked up, and then it seemed weird to get up and go home afterwards. So you spent the night, but then that felt weird to get up, go home, get ready for work and go to work. And so you just asked for a little space to keep an outfit or two in the closet or in a drawer. And I mean, you don't even really remember the time you moved in officially. It kind of happened. Well, the reason it just kind of happens is because you drifted into it. You didn't decide your way into it. And young people today are, many of them, not all of them, many of them are not making decisions about a relationship for fear of the relationship falling apart. And they believe, which is faulty, but they believe if we don't make any decisions about this relationship, when it falls apart, not if, when it falls apart, they think we won't hurt so bad. And that's just not how you're wired. Okay, you're wired for relationship formation. And the best way to make relationships is through decision. Now, all of that to say, back to your question, every relationship, almost every relationship starts off the same with attraction and chemistry. Couples, happily married couples, divorced couples, scored similarly on marital satisfaction or relational satisfaction early in the relationship, meaning something happens after initial attraction and chemistry. In that bonding time and connection time. And it's there that you're either deciding or you're drifting. Decide or drift begins early in the relationship. It's not like 10 years down the road. It's, do you believe decisions have power and are you making those? So you're asking, what do you do with a couple that finds themselves in drift? Mm-hmm. They don't really know when they stopped making decisions. This is where we introduce personal responsibility. And it's why I'm a believer in the one-on-one. Our marriage 911 ministry at our church has over 60 trained marriage ministry leaders, and we don't work couple to couple. We work one-on-one. One of our male leaders works with the husband, and a female leader works with the wife, because we operate on the fundamental principle, those absent are protected here. We make them focus on personal responsibility and begin to make changes in their own heart and get back to making personal decisions before they can begin making decisions as a couple. if that makes sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Right decisions.
Yeah, I mean that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, when you think about the personal responsibility aspect, I think in our culture today, even people in my generation and that are older than the millennials, I think the lack of responsibility, and not that all the millennials have a lack of personal responsibility, but you shared a stat while we were out there. I think it was you that shared this stat about how people, the milestones. Was that you that talked about the milestones of life, how it's gone down like or gone up 8 years? Did you share that? Like you leave home, finish school, get a job, start a family. I thought that was you that shared that. It used to be 23 years old when all that happened when you left home, but now it's up to 31 years of age. So the personal responsibility has kind of been diluted or waned or whatever. And so I think that's even impacted men that I've encountered who are going through that drift. And so I haven't thought about that because a lot of the couples tend to be counseled together. So I like the idea of what you're talking about, the one-on-one.
Ted, this is Brad. Doug, we do the same thing. So when Vic and I counsel a couple, our first meeting is with them together, just the four of us. And then from that point on, it's me with him, her with her. Very effective, and love that.
Well, Ted, you talked about in our conference out there, the skills to be a husband who enjoys life with your wife. And one of the skills is listening. You said being fully present. What do you mean by that, being a fully present listening husband?
Yeah, and the verse for that is the Song of Solomon 2:14. My dove in the clefts of the rock and the hiding places on the mountainside. Great description of your wife. My dove, this is a tender, gentle bird. So you have to get the dove to come out and experience the dove. You have to be gentle, tender, kind. My dove in the hiding place on the mountainside, the clefts of the rock, hiding place on the mountainside. Let me see your face. Let me hear your voice. For your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. So what he's saying there is, I want to get to know you. I want to see your face. I want to hear your voice. And when you do come out and I see your face and hear your voice, the words he speaks about that, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. He's a safe spouse. So when she's revealed, he's trustworthy. He's safe. It's a judgment-free zone. He's not trying to change her. He wants to get to know her. He wants to hear her talk. He wants to look into her eyes. It's a fully engaged and fully present husband. And we often forget, you know, I see guys do this all the time. You know, the skills from the boardroom translate into the family room and into the bedroom in many ways. I mean, it's the same relational skills. And guys are great at adapting to the needs of a client or the needs of a coworker. If you want to get the most production out of a staff or out of a team, you get to know them. You affirm them. You know, you get a lot more out of them with kindness than you do with yelling and screaming at them. And the same thing is true at home to your dove. And so I love to tell guys, you know, the joke in our home is, Amy, you know, we're 22 years married and we still haven't figured out that you cannot have a good conversation three rooms apart in the house. It just does not work. Because she'll ask me something and all I hear is,
like the old Charlie Brown.
I just respond, yeah. What's funny is after I hear that, I respond with, what? I want to hear it again. Yeah, so she does it again. Well, my nickname for her now is my dove.
Oh, my.
And when she starts talking to me from three rooms away, I call for her like a dove. And this is all she hears. And that means... Come to me, my love. Come to me, my dove. I was just in Louisiana, and I did that dove call, and a guy told me, yeah, you ever do that again in Louisiana, you'll get shot.
I was going to say.
So, get down there in Texas and Louisiana, man. They're liable to shoot you. Well, you know, it's funny because I was a pilot in the military, and so the jet engines, I have terrible hearing, right? I talk really loud, but I can't hear. So I'll make Lori irritated.
Is that your excuse for not listening?
Well, no. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that.
No.
I'm not alibying. Okay. Listen, I'm not alibying. All I'm saying is when I say what you say, like, I'll say, what'd you say? And she gets irritated because I can't hear, but it's the same thing. She's like in the other room.
See, I have the same problem. I listen to too much ZZ Top and Lynyrd Skynyrd as a high school kid.
Well, you talked about one of the things listening to, Ted, is the way we're conditioned to listen. And you talked about algorithms and cable news. Can you talk about that a little bit for us as guys, especially us as guys, how we're kind of programmed in the way we listen, and we bring our kind of like what you were referring to earlier about our biases into a particular conversation where we're hearing things through that lens. So,
yeah. Years ago, we all got our news from the same place, Walter Cronkite. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no, and it was, I mean, if you look back on it now, I mean, it was, the delivery was dry and boring because we were just getting information. We were getting information. That's what we called news. Well, that's not true anymore. Today, we get our news from algorithms online and from cable news networks that reinforce our biases, which means we're only listening to news we agree with. And we have that filter on our computer, whether we know it or not, our cookies, our digital footprint, all of that determines what we receive. And so they know you're conservative, they know you're liberal, they know you're bent, and so they send you the articles. And I just ask, guys, how's that work for you at home if you're only going to listen to your wife when you agree with her? The skill in listening to your dove is the ability to stay engaged when you completely disagree. And healthy people are not threatened by the opinions of others. We used to get up and watch the news to find out what was going on. Now we turn on the news to figure out what we should get mad at.
Isn't that the truth?
And be angry with the rest of the day. And honestly, I maybe watch the news once a week. Like, I have to – people will tell me things going on because I don't know they're going on because, frankly, I am a happier, healthier person because I don't watch cable news.
I'm with you.
And I tell folks, I don't care. And I have people come up to me after events. I mean, irate. Like, I can't believe you said that. I go, you. Every word that comes out of your mouth is validating my point.
you even shared. You shared about like a. You showed well, like you did with us. You showed a photo of the two guys from the 49ers kneeling, and just asked for a response. And didn't you say you did that at a conference, and a guy got really upset too, and came up and approached you after?
Yeah. All I do is show that picture and ask people, is it okay that we listen to what they're saying? And many Christians will yell out in the middle of an event or in the middle of a message, no, we shouldn't be listening to them. And by me asking if we can listen to them, people automatically assume they know what I believe about the NFL take the knee. And I don't even share my opinion. And this is what the scripture says, to answer before listening is folly and shame. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are today as a culture, in that we do this with our wives all the time. They begin to share, and if we have any sort of history with them, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, we know where they're going to take the conversation, and we don't even let them finish before we're solving the problem, before we're completing their sentence, before we're rushing them through it, wanting the Reader's Digest version. You know, listening is just that. It's eyeball to eyeball, body to body, distraction-free, kid-free, tech-free. I'm just listening to what you're saying, and I'm not rushing to judgment. For your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. I just want you to share, and I don't even need to give you my thought or opinion right now. And you know you're getting better at this listening thing when your wife is done talking and you don't even feel the need to share your opposite opinion.
Well, Brad and I were talking about this yesterday. We've both been married 30 plus years each. And, you know, it's hard. It's so difficult because as we're programmed as men, I think we go into it feeling, we feel threatened that they're not respecting us if they don't agree with us, first of all. And I didn't realize that, you know, even listening when you shared about that at our conference time, you know, listening to your wife does not mean that you have to agree with her, you know, and disagreeing with your wife doesn't mean that you hate her or that she hates you. So I thought those were all great things to share. And we've been, you know, and that's why I wanted you on today to kind of to talk about that. But hey, we got to take a break for the news on the half hour. Man, it's flown by. I love having you on just to kind of reiterate this stuff to us. Thank you so much for being with us. And we'll be back after the news. And it's Doug McCary and Brad Sykes at SWAT Radio with Ted.
WTRJ, Orange Park, Jacksonville. WAYL, St. Augustine. WATY, Folkston, Georgia. Online at ilovethetruth.com.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. The first person in the U.S. infected with a new and apparently more contagious variant of the coronavirus has been identified as a Colorado National Guardsman who had been sent out to help at a nursing home struggling with an outbreak. Health officials say a second Guard member may be infected also. A Republican senator says he'll object when Congress meets next week to certify President-elect Joe Biden's victory in the election. Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri says he'll protest the Electoral College certification because he says some states, including notably Pennsylvania, didn't follow their election laws. The number of Americans who signed contracts to buy homes declined again last month. The National Association of Realtors reports its index of pending home sales fell 2.6%. The Dow had 85 points. The Nasdaq is up 18. This is SRN News.
As life gets back.
For your Wednesday afternoon, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of scattered showers, high about 73. Tonight, mostly cloudy, expect a low 59. Thursday, the last day of 2020, mostly sunny with a high 78. On Thursday night, New Year's Eve, mostly cloudy, low 63. And Friday for New Year's Day, partly sunny, high 80.
When you get a little discouraged or you wonder if God is involved in your life, go back and see what He's already done for you. He hasn't changed and He's not going to change. You can count on it.
Join Dr. David Jeremiah as he shares a series of special messages for the new year. Next time on Turning Point.
Back to SWAT Radio, Brad Sykes, Doug McCary, our special guest, Ted Cunningham. Ted, don't you like that music Doug chooses to come in on the break from?
It's so funny.
It's so 80s, but man, I got to tell you, it was.
Well, that's so Doug, first of all.
I didn't get worked up one bit.
I love it.
Well, I just picture that aircraft carrier in the middle of the the Indian Ocean, you know, the Tom Cruise coming in. It's just every time I hear that.
You have those images of a movie from the 80s.
Isn't that crazy?
So, yeah, Ted, we're both 80s guys. So,
well, you know, the best music is from the 70s anyway, 70s and 80s. That's, I mean, even our kids listen to it today, which is crazy.
It is true.
But,
it is true. Hey, Ted, by the way, I just wanted to mention this. I'm sitting here jotting notes down. Is there a place either on the church's website, maybe your website, whatever, where our listeners could go and listen to maybe a podcast?
He's got a podcast.
That you've done similar to what we're talking about today?
Yeah, I actually just did two messages on marriage called Reset Your Marriage and Real Creative with the second one, Reset Your Marriage Part 2.
Love it.
Yeah, and so those are the last ones. Actually, and then Joe, you'll see the last three messages are – or Joe actually was last week and then 2 weeks before me.
Oh, good.
It's okay. woodhills.org, and it's on our Watch Now page.
Good, good. Well, I was Doug and I, since we've been discussing this week, I've told Doug, I've told our listeners that apart from God's Son, God's Word, and God's Spirit, God has used my wife as part of the sanctification process. And you know, there have been many times where duct tape needed to be used to put over my mouth so that I wouldn't speak, and I just let my wife speak. I think this is probably, Doug, as you and I have left here, I've had good conversations with my wife because my wife is usually busy and unable to tune in. What did y'all talk about? And I said, yeah, we talked about marriage. and keep emphasizing this idea of listening. And in fact, Ted, I told Doug when we started the year out this year, just talking about things we wanted to see happen in our lives. What I told Doug, I said, Doug, I want to be a better listener this year. Mm. I don't know if I am. Maybe you need to call Vicki.
Well, you know, Ted gave us, I think, 14 or 15 descriptions of bad listeners. So here's what I'm going to do. We're going to do association.
Oh,
all right. So I'm going to call out the bad listener, and you're going to give us a response or talk about it. Okay. So just like a synopsis for somebody that wasn't there, just the nodder. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the person, the nodder took a management course where they were taught to give emotional cues when someone is speaking, but they never learned how to balance that out. And they give way too many emotional cues when someone's listening.
Which means they're not engaged at all, right? They're doing
Absolutely.
What they're supposed to. All right. The eye roller.
Well, this one, John Gottman says it's the number one facial expression for contempt.
Mm.
And it goes beyond a person's opinion to their character.
Wow.
The eye roll says you don't matter.
Mm.
I don't agree with your opinion. The eye roll doesn't just say I don't agree with your opinion. It says you don't matter.
Wow, that's... makes me never want to eye roll again. Okay. Sorry. Personal confession here.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's okay. been a lot of that transparency going on.
Yeah. Lori, I went home yesterday, Ted, because we've been talking about this stuff you shared with us all week, and Lori goes, wow, you and Brad are having quite the marriage conference on air. Because we're having times of personal confession, you know.
Yeah.
All right, the eye wander.
We're only two in. We're only two in, and you both are nailed.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
More. So the eye wanderer.
The eye wanderer is always looking for a better conversation, a better thing to do, something more engaging. And it's not just that they're distracted. They're just checked out of the conversation, even like, man, grasping. And especially if you're in public or in a restaurant, everything that walks by, you're like, maybe that's something I can do. It's different than we'll see in another style in a second.
I really wish you would have just skipped that one.
Okay. The bored listener.
Yeah, the board, you can just tell that's the lights are on, but no one's home.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, but something else is going on. And you just feel the person that's engaged, but not trekking with you.
The distracted listener.
Yeah, there are two ways we're distracted. We can be distracted by our environment. Too much going on, and it's hard to focus. I found with most men, though, they are distracted by their mind, what's going on in the mind. And, for me, it's Amy says, I'm going to give you a 5 as a listener, but when I have your undivided attention, I'll give you an 8. Meaning if we can just give our undivided attention and disconnect from work, disconnect from the game, disconnect from the hobby or whatever it is we're engaged in, and be fully present.
The watch glancer.
That's self-explanatory, but in our day of smartwatches, you don't just get to glance down anymore because you'll get a blank screen. You have to shake your wrist a little bit to get it to turn on. And so it's a little bit more apparent when you're trying to check out the time.
I didn't even know my watch did that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. Well, you just taught Brad something about his iPhone watch.
I'm over here shaking.
He's
it.
Shaking his hand now. See it. But basically, this person's just saying, when is this going to be over, right? I mean, that's the
when's
ultimate.
When's it going to be over? Mm-hmm. And I love when I catch somebody watch glancing when I'm talking to them.
Yeah.
I always love to point to their watch and go, don't worry, this won't take long. That's always a great response to the watch glancing.
What I thought it was, are you done yet?
What about the scroller? This is a new one, right? The scroller?
The new one. Now, this is interesting because you guys are probably going to scroll for different reasons, and I'm even myself. Today, the communication style of the next generation is, I want to bring into this conversation a meme that I just saw, a video that I just saw, and it to us, it looks very rude when someone's talking to pull out your phone and start looking at it. But to many, they see the scrolling as, I'm just getting more content for this conversation.
You know, that's fascinating, because even I was talking to Lori about this yesterday, is, you know, when we're in a conversation now, and let's say she asks me a question that I don't know the answer to, like something about going on in town or whatever, instead of continuing to listen in the conversation, I will pick up my phone to Google or find out what she's talking about. And I used to think that was really rude when other people did that, but I'm finding myself sucked into it as well. But I thought that was interesting you bring that up. And then the one-upper, what about the one-upper listener?
The one-upper is, you know, always has a better story, always has met a better person. In the context of marriage, better things went on for them. I always, if it's two guys talking and the one just got back from Costa Rica, the other one decided to buy a villa in Costa Rica. And then, or I'm buying a boat to go from, you know, Florida to Costa. I mean, it's just always, I got to just get a little bit ahead of you in the conversation.
It's like that Brian Regan.
The meme monster.
The meme monster.
And then you got the one downer. And that was new. I hadn't heard about the one downer. That was interesting. The one downer listener.
The one downer is, you know, if you've had a bad day, you've had a bad day. You have no idea what a bad day is. Or if you're sick, oh, I remember when I, and, you know, it's like they've had a worse day, they're sicker than you, they have more troubles than you, and you want to be like, hey, I'm not trying to compete with you on this. I just am sharing with you what's going on.
Sympathy.
Yeah, the over-validator. I didn't make a note on that one. What is the over-validator?
Well, and on a very serious level here, and I think Christians really struggle with this one. We've got all of our cliches, and we think we need to give anybody who's sharing with us, I've got to put this in context for the person. And on a very serious note, a friend of ours who just miscarried last year, she gave us the best example of this, and she's the one that added that one to the list for us. She said, Ted, in the hospital, and they're actually in Europe, right now, and it's where they lost the baby. They said, you know, Christian after Christian came into the room to tell us their story of miscarriage. And she said, Ted, I was so grieving and so in a state of grief and mourning that I finally, on one lady, I didn't want to snap, but I finally put my hands up and said, I don't want to hear it. I know you're trying to help, but I am carrying such a heavy load right now. I've got no capacity to carry yours too.
Mm.
So I'm going to ask, and that Christians need to know, mourning with those who mourn means you don't have to add your story to theirs.
Wow.
You don't have to validate what's going on in their life. You can just listen and be present. You don't need to validate what they're saying. And that's where we get the over-validator. Sorry to take that.
No. That's
really need to grasp that one.
No, that's good. The bottom liner, which for a lot of guys is probably true, the bottom line listener.
And you can kind of see, like personalities and like love languages, you're gonna have a mix of these. And so the bottom liner and the watch glancer work together. Mm-hmm. That, you know, okay, let's wrap this up. And what you're saying is just give it to me. You're giving me details I don't need to know to get the full impact of this story.
Yeah. The interviewer. The guy who just asked too much questions, too many.
Oh, man, the guy who you make your first sentence, you say your first thing, and it's followed up with like three questions. And it's like that press briefing at the White House. It's like boom, 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 boom. And there's no flow to it. It's I've got an agenda. The interviewer has an agenda with the conversation. Mm. And just got to let it flow. Let it flow.
All right. And then the hijacker. That was good. The hijacker.
You get a sentence or two into your story, and I've got a better one, so we're just going to go ahead and end yours and jump right into mine.
So
this one's going to really enthrall all of us.
I do that a lot, Ted, and here's the way I do it. Here's the statement I make. I don't mean to interrupt you.
I don't.
Have you ever thought about that? I don't mean to interrupt you, but
on the beach.
Yeah, this is just accidental. It's just coming out of my mouth.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I really do, right? I mean, like yes, you do mean to interrupt me because you just interrupted me in saying that. Okay, the debater. That was the last one, the debater. No, I'm sorry, you added another one, the debater.
You got one more.
That one was pretty funny.
That
was a 15th.
The debater is, you know, like you start talking – and they need you to cite your source. They need to know what your research is. Where did you get that? Okay, well, listen, I'm just kind of briefly sharing. And when I say research shows, I actually don't have that, you know, annotated in my head. But they're like trying to punch holes in your logic. You're like, well, this ain't no fun.
Date and time.
I'm not continuing with this one. Yeah.
You're like, well, I was just talking about the weather.
September 14th, 2015.
By the way, though, in marriage, you know a couple when they're on the shallow levels of communication, that facts, right? There should be zero risk of escalated conflict when you're discussing facts.
Yeah.
But you know a couple is not enjoying life together when – you know, you start to hear a couple share a story, and he goes, well, last Tuesday. It wasn't Tuesday, it was Wednesday. Okay, you know what? I don't need to know the exact day to get the full impact of this story. We went to the store. We were at the restaurant. I can't believe you don't remember that. Okay, well, let's just...
That's funny. And then the sentence completer, the last one, and you actually shared an example from a conference with a lady you didn't even know, right? Came up to you and just like completing your thoughts. Hello? Well, that was awkward.
Yeah, he didn't complete your sentence.
He didn't complete my sentence for me. We dropped that call. But Ted, are you back?
Are you number 16?
No,
the muter.
I'm sitting here and I'm making a comment about the sentence completer, and it was awkward because you didn't respond, and I thought, well, maybe he didn't want to share that story. You know, maybe that was a personal story just for our context out there. But you were sharing about this lady who came up and you didn't know her. You know, I can understand, like, with Lori and me, a lot of times, like, as you know, we know each other so well, but this was a person you didn't even know is completing your sentences, right? I mean, didn't you say that?
I would go, I wasn't even through the first sentence of our conversation. I said, last week I went to the store, the church, you went to a restaurant. You were in Branson, you went to, and I'm going. And you know what she told me later when we discussed this, because I did a whole session on this at camp. She came to me afterwards and she goes, by the way, when I complete people's sentences, I feel like it adds energy to the conversation.
Oh, my.
And I'm like, yeah.
Okay.
I don't think that adds energy to the conversation.
If you think so, right? That's your world. Okay. Because we want to validate. I wrote down, listen, understand, and validate.
That's the best thing Gary Smalley ever taught me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was reminded a lot of Gary Smalley in our time together. You know, his thing for us, when he did his thing on the four temperaments, you know, the animals, the otter, lion, golden retriever, and beaver.
Mm-hmm.
It was very helpful for Lori and I to hear that. One, I'm an otter. Okay. I'm almost 100% otter, maybe a little bit of lion, but Lori was more lion. So you can imagine the fun that brought to our marriage to have the husband be the otter and Lori was the lion. But it was very helpful. But Gary taught down at First Baptist here, a conference, and it was just very impactful. And I know he was a good friend of yours. He was part of your church there. He was very
he was a mentor to you, wasn't he? I mean, wasn't he? Didn't y'all spend a lot of time together? And so I saw him there.
Yeah.
Well, you shared about that, and I wanted to get, before we run out of time, the honor list, because you shared about that with him. Define the honor list for us, and you know, just, you know, what Gary, how he helped you do what you do, because you do it well, and you've helped a lot of people, and I think Gary made a good investment in you, and you're paying dividends through other people. And share about that honor list with us.
Well, you know, honor was Gary's main message. It found its way into almost every talk he did, definitely every book he ever wrote. And honor just simply means esteemed as highly valuable. And Gary viewed every person as personally autographed by God, bearing the image of God. And he wanted to treat them with such value. And for him, it started in the home, and it started with Norma, his wife. And so I went into his office one day. This probably would have been over 10 years ago. We used to meet. He was an elder at our church, up until his health started failing. But he was an elder for 10 years at our church. He was one of the founders. And I went into his office after we would meet in his house for prayer once a week. And as I walked into his office, I saw on the desk like four pieces of paper stapled together. I could tell it was just a bulleted list. And you could tell it was like the main thing he was working on. It was typed out, but yet it had some handwritten notes on it. And I said, "Hey, Gary, what is this?" And he said, "It's an honor list." And I said, "What is an honor list?" He said, "Well, I've written down all the reasons why Norma Smalley is highly valuable." And again, this goes back to what we started with at the beginning. It's all the decisions that he's made about her value. Mm-hmm. And he believed that if you made these decisions about a person's value, you will spend your days looking for the evidence to support them. And that's why he had a great marriage and a great ministry, because he spent his days looking for the evidence to support the value people have. And I said, "What do you do with it?" It was four pages. It was probably over 100. You know, on the list, over 100 reasons why she was valuable. He said, "You know, when Norma and I get into conflict, I come in here and I pick the list up. And when I'm frustrated with her, the goal is not to pick up the list and be like, well, that's not true anymore, right? I don't start editing the list. That it's not the time to edit." He said, "I just need to remind myself of her value." And this is one of the favorite things he ever said about it. He said, "I rarely ever have to get off the first page." Mm-hmm. And that's profound to me. Like, you know, he had 100 reasons why he said, and Gary was a crier, you know,
he did
pretty quick. Yeah. He could shed tears pretty quick. And he would read, he said, a few into that list. He said, my eyes would get a little leaky and I'd go out. And he said the honor list was the best tool for reconciling with his wife that he had ever used. And, you know, he did this ministry for 40 years. And he said, keeping a list of all the reasons why your spouse is highly valuable. And so Amy and I have done the same thing. We each have a list on each other of why we're highly valuable. And every now and then I add some things, you know, that she's left off her list of me, and make sure she's got them all.
Help her out a little bit?
Do a quick inventory.
Sometimes I'm like, "Hey, I don't know if you've noticed lately the thing I've been doing, but maybe you might want to add that to my list."
God's not finished with me yet.
Did you notice I cleaned those gutters the other day? You know, I was up on that roof risking my life to clean those things out.
Hey, so, Ted, I got to say, and I just was jotting that down, that is really good right there. I mean, you know, 33 years of marriage, my own life, and you know, Doug and I, you and I have been talking about the things, how we view, what's the tone of our marriage, you know, or I think that was the word you used.
Well, that was what Ted, you talked about, I think, Ted, when you were...
Oh, maybe that's why I just said, "Oh, that's good."
Yeah, no.
Exactly. I've heard that before.
Yeah, well, you said...
Did you quote Ted on that? I quoted it.
I did not claim credit for that. I did give credit. The quality of your marriage is often revealed in the tone of your marriage message.
But I think the tone, there's a tone based on what you value. I think, Doug, Ted, I was telling Doug earlier, in fact, it may have been Monday, Doug, when we finished the broadcast. We're out in the parking lot about getting our cars. And I just confessed to Doug, I am a critical person. I have very critical eyes, and maybe that's my business background. I have a tendency. I literally rushed to get to the studio today, coming from a walkthrough on a piece of real estate. You know, the job of a walkthrough is to go through and pick out what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how that becomes so much of my mindset, even in relationships. You know, and this just this idea of making a list. Honor list, decisions you've made about a person's value. That's good.
It is, Ted. And I, you know, the things that I got away from Branson and even just again talking today is that, you know, it goes back to the one of the very first things you said is that our marital satisfaction is a choice. It's a choice. In flight school, we had this thing called the halo effect that, you know, if you have a flight and you do really, really good your initial flight with somebody, like an instructor, there's a halo effect that kind of carries you through because he goes back and tells other people, man, that guy's really good, right? So when people come into the next flight, they think, okay, this is a good student. Likewise, if you have a bad flight for whatever reason, in flight school, that then that guy goes back and says, God, that guy can't fly nothing. So the instructor comes into the flight
skeptical
with an attitude like, okay, this guy's not a good pilot. And it's called the halo effect. And in essence, what you're talking about is in marriage, if you project those things onto your spouse, then of course you're going to see from the bottom side whatever they're doing. Like you said, your husband's had a hard day's work. He's been in, and he's in there resting, but you see him as lazy, even though he's been working hard all day. It's the way you look, or the wife, you know, it's like if you think she's a nag, you don't know what kind of hard day she's had. You're going to project that onto her. So I hear that loud and clear. And I think hopefully our audience hears that for both spouses, that it is a choice. And as believers, we are to be loving and honoring to our spouse. I mean, basically what you're saying about Smalley, and one of the most impactful things for me that you said out there too, is I will validate your feelings when I don't agree with your opinion. I mean, that is just huge for us as guys. So there was one other thing I wanted to share. We got 2 minutes. So I'm going to give a quote that your son gave that I thought was hilarious. Dad, it's hard to bounce your eyes in a sea of yoga pants. I thought that was the funniest quote. Contextually, people don't know what we're talking about, but I always tell people, because seriously, when you walk, like as a married man, all right, you walk through and you see attractive women, you try to bounce your eyes to other places, right? And his son said, Dad, it's hard to bounce your eyes in a sea of yoga pants, like when they're all around you, right? Isn't that the context? I kind of get.
And we were at a mall, and I was just teaching him that again. It's like, you know, hey, we're not going to walk too close to that store right there. When you see bright pink coming out of the store, we walk to the other side, we turn away. And I said, you know, son, it's just bouncing your eyes. I'm he's 13 now, and I think he was maybe 11 at the time. And then we were in a parking lot, getting in our car, waiting on our wife. My wife and daughter still had about probably 20 minutes to shop. And that's when he just said, boy, Dad, it sure is hard to bounce your eyes in a sea of yoga pants.
Oh, that's great.
And I went, yep, son. And that's why we do it.
I have good memories of my youngest son walking past those stores, and he just covered his eyes. So Anyway, hey, Ted, it's been great having you on with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much. Hey, we have got to run. We'll be back tomorrow talking about this. Ted, thank you. Go to woodhills.org for more on Ted Cunningham. Ted, I hope you have a great weekend, brother. Take care.
Thank you. You too, guys.
If you missed a SWAT radio broadcast this week and would like to hear any show in its entirety, then go to SWATradio.com. Click on past shows where you can listen to the broadcast. Also, if you're looking for a band of brothers that gather around God's Word to be a part of, then go to SWATradio.com and email one of our hosts, and they can get you plugged in to one of the local SWAT Bible studies. Tune in next time to explore how SWAT Radio...
WTRJ, Orange Park, Jacksonville. WAYL, St. Augustine. WATY, Folkston, Georgia. Online at ilovethetruth.com.